up and present the bill, please, with your staffer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you. For the record, Bill Wilkowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage. Appreciate the opportunity to present this to you today. Senate Bill 122 modernizes Alaska's corporate income tax to address the realities of a digital world by making two reforms to Alaska's tax apportionment rules. The Department of Revenue estimates, puts an indeterminate fiscal note, but estimates that this provision will raise between $20 and $65 million per year. This bill does a couple things. Number one, it adopts market-based sourcing for determining what sales income can be taxed by Alaska. And secondly, calculates the taxable income for online businesses based solely on a business's sales in Alaska. It's called the single sales factor. I want to emphasize this does not change the corporate income tax rates or brackets for anyone. There's some Supreme Court case law on this issue. Under the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, states may only tax activity attributable to the particular state. So for businesses that operate across state lines, it is necessary to determine what portion of their income can be attributed to each state. The Supreme Court has ruled that states may use a mathematical formula to calculate how much of a business's income may be taxed by their state. This relieves businesses of the burden of having to do separate accounting for every state. Traditionally, most states, including Alaska, have used a three-factor formula to apportion taxable income where the percent of a business's sales in Alaska, the percent of a business's property in Alaska, and the percent of a business's payroll in Alaska are equally weighted to determine what portion of their income is subject to be taxed by Alaska. Market-based sourcing, which is what this bill adopts, just means that sales that happen in Alaska are considered taxable income in Alaska. Here's the problem. Currently, taxpayers can argue that sales made through out-of-state websites should not be considered Alaska sales. Transactions related to tangible property in Alaska will be considered Alaska sales. Sales under this bill. Sales of services delivered in Alaska will be considered Alaska sales under this bill. And sales of intangible property will be considered Alaska sales if they are purchased by an Alaskan consumer or used in the state. The traditional three-factor formula that we currently have was designed for a brick-and-mortar world and does not reflect how an online business can operate in Alaska without having property or payroll here. A business can target advertising to Alaska, sell products to Alaskans using Alaska's broadband infrastructure, deliver goods using Alaska's roads, using our ports, using our airports, without having to pay any property or payroll taxes in Alaska. Switching to a single sales factor for online businesses, which is what this bill does, will ensure that Alaska revenues from online businesses will be properly considered taxable by Alaska. The single sales factor will apply to corporations that make only more than 50% of their sales in Alaska electronically. Market-based sourcing and single sales factor are increasingly being used across the country. The concepts that we're presenting today are very common. At least 36 states use market-based sourcing for at least some industries. At least 37 states use a single sales factor for at least some industries. These changes will have little or no effect on consumer prices since businesses usually set their rates nationally. I appreciate the time. I know this is a complicated topic. That's why I have my staffer, David Dunsmore, here to present this PowerPoint presentation, which hopefully will synthesize it down and make it much more readily understandable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Any questions on the bill sponsored by members of the committee? If not, Mr. Dunsmore.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilkowski. Senate Bill 122, as Senator Wilkowski said, makes two reforms to bring Alaska's tax apportionment system into the 21st century. It adopts market-based sourcing to ensure Alaskan sales are properly apportioned to our state, and adopts a single sales factor for highly digitized businesses. This bill makes no changes to the corporate income tax rates or to tax brackets. So what is tax apportionment? Under the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution, states may only tax activity that is reasonably attributable to their state. So when taxpayers operate in multiple states, it's necessary to determine which portion of their income is taxable in each state. And to avoid requiring multi-state businesses to separately account in all 50 states, states generally use a mathematical formula for apportionment. In Alaska, this is relevant for a corporate income tax, but in states that have other taxes, they have to deal with apportionment as well. The Supreme Court has ruled that states must use fair apportionment to determine what is taxable by their state and require that the apportionment systems be both internally and externally consistent. Internal consistency means that if all states were to adopt the same system for apportionment, there'd be no double taxation, so each dollar would only be taxed by one state. And external consistency means that the value is fairly attributable to the state taxing it. Traditionally, states have used an equally weighted three-factor formula for tax apportionment that equally weights the percent of the taxpayer's sales in that state, the percent of their property located in that state, and the percentage of their payroll that is made in that state. And this is what the mathematical formula looks like. Alaska belongs to the Multi-State Tax Compact. This is an advisory compact with 14 other states in the District of Columbia as full members that promotes uniformity in tax apportionment and filing procedures. Alaska is represented by the Commissioner of Revenue on the commission that governs the compact. Alaska codified the language of the compact in 1970 and since then has not modified that section of statute. The current apportionment formula was designed for a brick-and-mortar world. In the modern digital economy, a corporation can target advertising directly to an Alaskan consumer, can sell a product through Alaska's broadband infrastructure, and can ship it through our roads, ports, and airports, all without having any property or payroll in Alaska. So this bill just makes common sense reforms to ensure that these Alaska sales are properly treated as Alaska sales. The first reform is known as market-based sourcing. Currently, Alaska uses a methodology called cost of performance when calculating the sales factor to determine whether sales happen in Alaska. Under cost of performance, a sale is considered to happen in Alaska when the income-producing activity is performed in this state. So this means that out-of-state corporations can argue that online sales to Alaskans do not, in fact, take place in Alaska. And market-based sourcing will say that if the market for the sale is in Alaska, the sale is considered to be an Alaska sale. So under market-based sourcing, a sale occurs in Alaska when, if it's for real property or tangible personal property, when the property is located in the state, for services, when the service is delivered in the state, and for intangible property, when it is used in the state. At least 36 other states have already adopted some form of market-based sourcing, and these states span every region of the country with the exception of Alaska and include both small, medium-sized, and large population states. The second reform in this bill is to adopt a single sales factor for highly digitized businesses. For highly digitized businesses only, the sales factor would be the only factor used for calculating tax apportionment. And so this is what the formula for highly digitized businesses would look like. A business would be considered highly digitized if 50% or more of its Alaska sales are of either intangible property delivered electronically, services delivered electronically, services related to computers, electronic transmission, or internet technology are of tangible property purchased through the internet. The three-factor formula will still be used for brick-and-mortar businesses. This is not the first time that Alaska has found that the traditional three-factor formula was not appropriate and did not fairly reflect income for an industry. We currently use a different apportionment formula for apportioning oil and gas corporate income taxes. And similarly, this bill because the three-factor formula does not fairly reflect how online sales happen in the state, would adopt a different formula for this industry. The current three-factor formula is actually a disincentive for high-tech businesses opening Alaska facilities, because having payroll and property in Alaska can significantly increase an online business's Alaska taxes. So adopting a single sales factor for highly digitized businesses will remove this disincentive and level the playing field between Alaskan and out-of-state businesses. At least 37 other states already use a single sales factor for at least some industries. And as with market-based sourcing, these states are both across the population spectrum and across all regions of the country, with the exception of Alaska. Alaska is not the only jurisdiction that's been having to grapple with how to bring a tax structure into the 21st century. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development and the G20 have actually been working over the last decade, because this has been an issue that countries across the world has been identified as something that needs to be modernized in their tax structures. But tax experts have actually noted that the state apportionment systems and a market-based sourcing and single sales factor allows states to better address online sales in their jurisdiction than other tax regimes around the world. These reforms will have little, if any, impact on Alaska consumers, as online businesses generally set their prices at the national or global level, and both market-based sourcing and single sales factor are common features of tax apportionment systems across the country. And this bill does not affect the tax rates or brackets at all. It merely changes how apportionment for which income is taxable in Alaska is considered. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Dunsmore or the bill sponsor? One of the questions I have for you, Mr. Dunmore, is that as you look at some of the other states, how does this bill align with them, you know, the 37 or so states that are involved in this type of electronic sales and those things?
Mr. Chairman, in the bill packet, we've included a couple of reports that show which apportionment formulas are used in different states, as well as what market-based sourcing that provides the details for how that's done in every state. It is increasingly common. Some states have carved out market-based sourcing only for non-tangible personal property, but some states, as this bill does, would just use the market-based sourcing across the board. And some states have adopted single sales factors in different manners and for different industries.
As you look at the landscape, is it a majority of the states are having this kind of structure in place for electronic sales and those things?
Mr. Chairman, the majority of states have some form of market-based sourcing and some form of single sales factor. But as each state has its own unique tax structures, they do. There is variance between how each state implements it.
Okay. Any other questions by members of the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. I think it's an important modernization step. A practical question in terms of delivery of services. More and more very large corporations are delivering services primarily over the internet. Does the bill have definitions that would cover those services as provided in Alaska, or do we run the risk of loopholes? Can you, perform, 16 months of engineering work and then mail the final report and get out of apportioning the contract to Alaska because you didn't deliver it electronically?
Mr. Dunsmore.
Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Keel's question, we were working with language that was suggested by the Department of Revenue, so they could probably better answer, but I know this was a concern that they're trying to address, so I think they could do a better job of answering the specifics of which in that scenario.
Mr. Senator Keel, do you want to have revenue come on and answer it now? We're supposed to have Brendan Spanos online.
Mr. Chairman, whenever the committee finds it convenient.
Mr. Spanos, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am. For the record, this is Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with Department of Revenue Tax Division. Through the chair, Representative, our Senator Keel, if I heard the question right, you were asking about services, the sale of services. And the sale is treated the same, whether it is tangible or intangible. So under market-based sourcing, which is what the bill is doing, that sale would be marketed to Alaska. That's where the market is. That's where the consumer is. And therefore, it would be sourced to Alaska under the bill. Under current statute, we follow cost of performance. And since the contract was the cost of performing the contract is outside of the state, under our current statutes, it would be sourced outside of the state.
Answer your question, Senator Q.
To follow up, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So, Mr. Spanos, that then would not change here because most of those firms would not be considered highly digitized. Is that correct?
Mr. Spanos.
So, through the chair, Senator Keel, it would depend on if they fit that definition of highly digitized. So, more than half of their transactions, I believe is how it's worded, would have to be digital in form. And so I would need more specifics, I think, to determine that. But yes, if they met the definition, it would be sourced here. If they didn't meet, or I should say regardless, it would be sourced here because the market-based sourcing changes in the statute would apply to all taxpayers, corporate income taxpayers. The highly digitized single sales factor would apply only to digital taxpayers. So I may have misspoke earlier. The market-based sourcing rules would apply to all taxpayers, and therefore that sale would be sourced to Alaska. But they may, if they don't meet the highly digitized definition, they would still be subject to the three factors of property, payroll, and sales.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Spanos or Mr. Dunsmore on this portion of the bill? If not, are you ready for a sectional analysis, Mr. Dunsmore?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Section 1 of the bill amends Alaska's codification of the Multi-State Tax Compact. In accordance with the legislative drafting standards, the entire text of that compact is spelled out, although much of it is not being amended. So Articles 1 through 3 of the compact contain no amendments. Article 4 is where the amendments are made. There are amendments in Section 1 amending the definition of using the term apportionable income to replace the term business income in subsection A and subsection E as well, and subsection G clarifies the definition of sale. In Article 4, Section 4, there's a conforming amendment to replace the word non-business with non-apportionable. In Section 9, there is another similar conforming amendment. Section 17 contains the amendments related to market-based sourcing. Subsection A states that sales are considered to be in the state if the taxpayer's market for the sale is in the state. Paragraph 1 states that the market for transactions related to real property is in the state if the property is in the state. Paragraph 2 states that the market for transactions relating to tangible personal property is in the state if the property is in the state. Paragraph 3 states that the market for sales of service is in the state if the service is delivered to a location in the state. And paragraph 4 provides for how the market for sales is determined for intangible property. Subparagraph I provides that the market for rented, leased, or licensed intangible property is in the state if it's purchased by a consumer in the state. Subparagraph II states that when the intangible property is sold, the market is considered to be in the state if the property is used in the state. Paragraph B provides that if the state of assignment for a sale cannot be determined, it shall be reasonably approximated. Paragraph C states that when a taxpayer is not taxable in a state to which sales would be assigned by this section, they shall be excluded from the denominator of the sales factor. Paragraph D authorizes the tax administrator, for Alaska is the Department of Revenue, to adopt regulations to implement this section. The remaining articles of the compact contain no amendments. Section 2 of the bill is a conforming amendment replacing the word business with the word apportionable, as are sections 3, 4, and 5. Section 6 is a conforming section referencing the provisions concerning highly digitized businesses in Section 7. Section 7 provides that a single sales factor shall be used for tax apportionment for highly digitized businesses. Subsection A states the tax apportionment for highly digitized businesses shall be done in accordance with Alaska's codification of the multi-state tax compact, except as modified by this section to use a single sales factor. Subsection B states that only the sales factor shall be used for apportionment for highly digitized businesses. Subsection C defines highly digitized businesses. Subsection D allows the Department of Revenue to require a taxpayer to apportion their income in accordance with this section if the department determines that they are a highly digitized business. Subsection E provides definitions of delivered, electronic transmission, intangible property, and internet sales. Section 8 is a transition section providing that the single sales factor for highly digitized businesses only applies for tax years beginning January 1st, 2024 or later. And Section 9 is an effective date of January 1st, 2024.
Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Densmore on the sectional analysis? If not, we'll go on to the fiscal note. Mr. Spanos, are you available to go ahead and give us the scoop on the fiscal note that's coming from the Department of Revenue?
Yes, again, this is Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director for the Department of Revenue Tax Division. And I'm not going to go over the background information, as the bill sponsor did a great job in discussing that on the current structure and the changes in the bill. The revenue impact of the bill is, as the bill sponsor noted, it's indeterminate because there are a lot of unknowns. However, the department does estimate that the bill could generate total revenue to the state anywhere from $25 million to $65 million annually at full implementation. Those are large numbers, and we just have an uncertainty around picking a really good one. So we may we would have to wait and see to see if the bill were to pass what the actual revenues would be. But we believe that's a fairly general number there, as can be seen from the broad range of this possible revenues. There is a high degree of uncertainty about how to shift the market-based sourcing and applying a single receipt factor to the highly digitized businesses would impact this revenue. There are also uncertainties about what companies would fall in the definition of highly digitized businesses. Therefore, the department analyzed this SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, public U.S. income data, and applied a simple Alaska household versus U.S. household scaling factor to estimate how much income would be apportioned to Alaska. The department then applied the highest tax rate of 9.4% to the Alaska scaled income to come up with a revenue impact range. And so there are a lot of assumptions in there that scaling factor and that the using the SEC data is the right way to go. But again, that's why we have an indeterminate note. As far as implementation costs, the initial fast track would be for the department to adopt regulations prior to the effective date of January 1, 2024, and update the tax revenue management system and our revenue online system, which is how our taxpayers file electronically. A lot of them also use the modernized e-file that we receive the same way that they file with the IRS. The department would also need to update its corporate income tax forms, integrate those with the national accounting and tax software vendors in order to update programs that they use to prepare, that the taxpayers use to prepare their corporate income tax returns. And the department would use existing resources to make all those necessary changes. Mostly it's just going in and tweaking some coding in our program to make the changes, since the corporate income tax already exists in Alaska and there wouldn't need to be a lot of additional programming done. Normally, a larger change would require more cost to do the programming. But we can do this one with existing resources. We do expect to engage in robust taxpayer outreach and compliance programs to ensure taxpayers understand and comply with the filing requirements. And this additional work would require the department to hire one additional lead auditor, which is an auditor 4, and then one additional staff auditor, which is a range 1, 2, 3. And the department would have additional travel costs for training those auditors on the market-based sourcing and digitized businesses, highly digitized businesses, and also for conducting outreach and for audit purposes.
Mr. Spanos, with all due respect, the numbers between $25 and $65 million a year, there's quite a spread there. Can you be a little more specific as to where would it be closer to the upper end or lower end, or you have a more specific number than that?
So, Mr. Chair, it's very difficult to get an exact number. If we were held to it and asked for just one number, we would probably go on the lower end. Okay. We're not really confident in these numbers.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Spanos related to the fiscal note? If not, we'll go on to public testimony. Do you have anybody on for public testimony? And we'll close public testimony then. Any other closing comments by the bill sponsor or his trusty staff?
Nothing else, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside. Next bill we have up is Senate Bill 34 by Senator Kaufman, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. I'm going to invite Senator Kaufman to come on up here with his aide, Emma Torkelson, to introduce the bill. And Ms. Torkelson will go ahead and go through the sectional analysis. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. For the chair, Senator James Kaufman, Senate District F, I'd like to thank the co-chair and members of the Senate Finance Chair or Committee for hearing this bill. I'd like to always establish first that the pronunciation that we're using in the Senate is CACFA. There's other pronunciations. We'll standardize on that. So CACFA provides an important service, acting as both an institutional memory and a citizens resource center. There's important leveraging opportunities where a very small investment in CACFA can produce large benefits for the people of Alaska. Originally led by Senator Betty Fahrenkamp, CACFA was first established in 81, shortly after Congress passed ANILCA, which is, for those listening at home, the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, to ensure Alaskans retain knowledge of the careful compromises that were made in ANILCA. The commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator, and one representative. It's made of independent, nonpartisan groups statutorily required to be geographically balanced and representative of a diversity of users and users of federal land. The commission holds hearings to collect public comment on decisions that affect them, disseminates information that is about old and new regulations to the public, the executive branch, and the legislature. They also monitor the Federal Register and regularly submit written comment in response to actions that affect Alaska. They work proactively, and this is important, proactively with federal agencies to resolve issues, and then helps Alaskans navigate the federal permitting process. So while the commission can recommend legal action to the Attorney General's office, historically the commission members have been able to successfully work with federal agencies in many instances to ensure that Alaska's interests fairly represented in final regulations and management plans. Further, while the state's ANILCA program and CACFA both monitor federal actions, CACFA's role is to represent the views of Alaskan citizens concerning federal land and the management plans within the state. So to wrap it up, CACFA will sunset in 2021, or it did sunset in 2021, and Senate Bill 34 seeks to reestablish the commission, setting a new sunset date of June 30th, 2031. And the timing of this, since it lapsed, is that we still have talent. We haven't completely lost the resource, the knowledge base, and I believe that we're at a critical juncture here to reestablish it while we still have the benefit of folks that know and can pass on that information to younger Alaskans. So thank you very much.
Any questions of the bill sponsored by members of the committee? Now, Ms. Torkelson, you want to go through the sectional analysis, please?
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman. Section 1 amends AS 4466-10010A, creating a new subsection 15, reestablishing the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, setting a new sunset date of June 30th, 2031. Section 2 is a technical change amending 4466-010A to remove subsection 10 where CACFA's previous sunset date of June 30th, 2021 was listed. Section 3 incorporates in transitionary language into uncodified law of Alaska, establishing the initial term lengths of new appointments to the commission. Thereafter, the term limits outlined in the commission statute will take effect. Finally, Section 4 sets an effective date of July 1st, 2023. Thank you.
Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Torkelson or the bill sponsor? Since the commission existed until 2020 or 2021 and was allowed to sunset, we have a Chris Curtis with the legislative auditor here to remind the committee about the previous sunset review. Ms. Curtis, are you ready to enlighten the committee on the committee review?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. You should have a copy of the audit in your meeting packets. It's back from April 2020. That audit reviewed the commission's activities from 2015 to 2017, which is the point at which the commission was defunded. So our audit concluded that the commission was operating effectively and did not significantly duplicate the activities of other state agencies. We also concluded that there was a continuing public need for the commission, and we recommended an 8-year extension, which was the maximum allowed for in statute. We made no recommendations for improvements, and we did conclude that the commission and its staff were highly productive and impactful. I also want to draw your attention to page 21, which was the commissioner of DNR's response to the audit, and the commissioner was in full support of an 8-year extension. That's the quick version.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Curtis, the legislative auditor? With that, thank you very much for coming up. Next, we have under invited testimony Tina Cunning, ANILCA specialist. Is she on the line? Ms. Cunning, would you please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
This is Tina. Can you hear me okay?
Coming in loud and clear, Ms. Cunning.
Okay, my name is Tina Cunning. I worked in the state's ANILCA program from its beginning in 1981 for nearly 30 years in the implementation of ANILCA. And since retiring in 2010, I'm part of a team that conducts ANILCA training. If you recall that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 called for study of federal lands to set aside 80 million acres in special conservation status. For 9 years thereafter, there was considerable angst across Alaska about what would be in the final D2 bill, as it was called, such as how the huge blocks of conservation units would affect remote villages, small rural businesses, access for hunting, fishing, subsistence, access to private and state inholdings, utilities, etc. The Alaska legislature and governor worked with a broad representation of rural residents, businesses, communities, AFN, and industry to adopt a bottom line, a list of 7 consensus points used by Alaska's delegation in negotiations in Congress. The bipartisan adoption of ANILCA in 1980 included many unique protections for the traditional way of life and use of the federal lands that were on Alaska's list that are very different from federal management in other states. In 1981, the Alaska legislature established CACFA to monitor ANILCA's implementation and to protect those hard-fought for Alaskans' uses of federal lands. CACFA was invaluable in helping individual Alaskans work through federal requirements to use federal lands, such as commercial permits for air taxis, sled dog tours, hunting guides, access across wilderness to inholdings, and cabins needed for subsistence trapping and other traditional activities. In the 40-plus years since passage, most Alaskans and government employees have forgotten ANILCA's special provisions for public uses that the governor, legislature, ANCSA corporations, AFN, rural residents, Senator Stevens, and Congressman Young fought so hard for. And most Alaskans do not read the Federal Register every morning with their coffee. But that is exactly what the CACFA executive director did. Since CACFA sunset, there is no one to help individual Alaskans navigate red tape or help with the regulatory process to appeal decisions when a federal manager simply says no. CACFA was also a help to federal agencies. For example, ANILCA has a provision for local hire that allows federal agencies to hire locals bypassing the normal federal hiring process. Hundreds of Alaskans are hired through this provision. When national office policies conflicted with ANILCA's local hire provisions, Alaska's federal agencies worked with CACFA and the delegation to resolve it. As an independent commission, changes in state administration politics, which I witnessed working on the inside, cannot interfere with CACFA's defense of individual Alaskans' rights or the protection of other unique provisions for public use on federal lands that were adopted by Congress and ANILCA. The Alaska legislature was wise in establishing this citizen forum to help Alaskans meet their social and economic needs promised in the final deal that Congress adopted in ANILCA. The state cannot defend individuals, and every passing year since CACFA sunset, there's no one to help, resulting in lost opportunities for Alaskans and conflicts that remain unresolved. I strongly support reauthorization of this independent commission for the benefit of all Alaskans in implementing ANILCA as Congress intended. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cunning. Any questions of Ms. Cunning by members of the committee? If not, I want to thank you for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Cunning. Next, we have Stan Liepert, who was the former CACFA executive director from 1984 to 1999 and then 2007 to 2014. Would you like to make some comments, Mr. Liepert?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have much to say. I was mostly on the line to answer questions if you had any. I just say that I think that the commission was effective because we did our homework and we worked well with federal agencies, even in those areas where we disagreed. But I think our most important work was working with individual citizens and public groups in trying to resolve some of the conflicts that just naturally arose because of implementation of ANILCA. And as Tina pointed out, in 42 years since ANILCA passed, federal agencies have sometimes ignored those compromises that were such an important part of that legislation. And so we always saw it as our job to remind them what those compromises were and how to live up to the guarantees that were in that statute. So that's pretty much all I have to say right now, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Liepert, what do you think the reasons were for the for CACFA to be sunset?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that question, sir.
What was the reason that the CACFA was sunsetted back in 2021?
Why was it sunsetted?
Yes. If you don't know the answer, that you don't know the answer, so we'll just go on. Any other questions, Mr. Liebhardt, by members of the committee? If not, the fiscal note is before us. A fiscal note from Ashley Adoko, Director of the Office of Project Management and Permitting for DNR. Ms. Yes, Adoko, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
You're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead and go over through the fiscal note for us, if you would, please.
Sure. For the record, this is Ashley Adoko, Executive Director of the Office of Project Management and Permitting within the Department of Natural Resources. And what we have for you today is a fiscal note that reflects one personnel that would be needed for implementation of the program, and that would be the large project coordinator slash CAFPA executive director, and the expenditures that you see are consistent with that position.
Any questions by members of the committee or Ms. Adoko? Not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. We have anybody for on public testimony? We don't have anybody on public testimony, and I don't see anybody online for that. And so we'll go ahead and make sure we open public testimony and close public testimony. We're ready to go ahead and set this bill aside, unless there's further questions from members of the committee for the bill sponsor or his trustee aide, Mr. Torkelson. No, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you. I'd just like to say I appreciate the hearing today. Thank you very much.
That concludes this afternoon's agenda. The next meeting will be tomorrow morning, April 18th at 9 a.m. On the agenda, we have an overview of the capital and supplemental budgets from the OMB Director, Neil Steininger. Second hearing on three bills, which is SB 29 by Senator Stevens related to civics education, Senate Bill 87 by Senator Bjorkman about lumber grading, Senate Bill 104 by Senator Dunbar of Civil Legal Services Fund. There's no further business to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 2:15 p.m.